couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week, we got a jam-packed show because we got a bunch of different things to talk about.
There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Even though there's no big movie opening this week.
Yeah.
But we do have some things we do want to talk about. We're not talking about Thor. That came out last week.
No, that is on your notes, but that's not what we're talking about.
We probably
will talk about it a little bit, though.
I'm sure we'll mention Thor at some point.
Could be.
We also are going to talk about The Best Man Holiday. We're going to talk about Dallas Buyers Club, Charlie Countryman. We're not going to talk about The Wolf of Wall Street, which was supposed to come out this week.
Right.
But Martin Scorsese doesn't have his stuff together and had to bump it to Christmas.
Which is actually a big deal, considering that they were talking about it might not come out until sometime next year. So
I know.
They're going to make it by Christmas, even if they finish making it the night before.
Yes.
It will come out on Christmas.
This is the advantage of digital technology now, where they can send, you don't have to make a print.
Is Scorsese doing digital now? Because he didn't used to until recently.
Well, he does edit. At least, the very least, editing is going to be all digital.
Okay.
So they'll probably present in digital. Most places don't have 35mm projectors
anymore. No, it's
true. So we're also going to have we have another listener email to talk about. We have some news, some really interesting news, and some DVDs and Blu-rays that we're going to talk about later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
For right now, if you want to get a hold of us, you can get us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. Creditors, we will not be calling you back. You can find us on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM. If you want to find me personally on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
And I'm Katie K. Reviews.
That's right. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. Real quick, a little tease ahead of what we've got coming up. We've got a soundbite from The Best Man Holiday because we don't have a soundbite for The Wolf of Wall Street. So here's what you got to look forward to with The Best Man Holiday.
In the last movie, you know, everything ends positively, so we think. And when I read the second one, it was nice to know that we got a realistic portrayal of what real relationships and you know, squabbles are like.
There we go. Let's move on, though.
We'll talk about that eventually, and I'm sure we've got plenty to say.
We'll hear some amazing stuff about that movie. That'll be in the next segment. But first, we're going to talk about some news, and this one's really sort of made the – it's sort of getting waves of news because first there was this – the initial article, and you pointed it out to me, but I'm seeing other analysis written on it, and it is about movie violence, about gun violence in PG-13 movies.
Yes, which they have done a study on it, and now it's – there's more gun violence in PG-13 movies than in rated R movies.
Yeah.
And they say the violence has tripled since 1985.
Yes.
And you have plenty to say about this. I can see it all over your face.
Well, and here's why. I didn't just read the article. I went and I read the study.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a chance to read it?
I didn't read the whole study,
because it's like 7 pages
right,
long.
Yeah.
It's thick. It's not very – it's academically written. Mm-hmm. And so it's these things are boring as heck. But here's the thing. The way they judged it, the way they studied it
– they did pick random movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They picked random movies. They also only – counted instances of person-on-person handgun violence. So basically, they said if you could hold the weapon in your hand and shoot somebody with it, that counted. Rifles are cool. Cannons are not. Helicopter guns don't count. Gatling guns don't count. Also, they use energy weapons like plasma weapons in a sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Iron Man literally has handguns because he's got guns that come out of his hands because they fire.
It's true.
Plasma. They also ignored anything that was just a presence of a firearm.
Okay.
Like if there's a cop that shows up and he has a gun on his belt, doesn't use it.
Sure.
That doesn't count. They also said it doesn't count if it's like used in hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas like the deer hunter, the scenes with them hunting deer doesn't count, but the Russian roulette scene would count.
Sure.
Of course, that was not done after 1985.
No.
Here's the problem that this is one of the problems I had with the study. They have a lot of focus on what's called the weapon effect. And the weapon effect is defined as saying the presence of guns sometimes will make people more aggressive.
Right.
Going back to a study where they put people in a room and they basically antagonized them and they had objects on the table. And if it was a weapon, if there was like a shotgun or a handgun on the table, they noticed people got more aggressive. And I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. There's a huge difference between seeing a movie where there's guns on screen and actually having a gun on the table during an argument.
Yeah, wow.
I think that makes a difference. Also, if you're going to be going after the weapon effect, meaning the presence of weapons are what make people more aggressive, not the violence,
mm-hmm.
then ignoring weapons in hunting
and
with police officers, that to me makes me question the validity of the study and actually the validity of
some of the conclusions.
Not the validity of what they saw. This is what they measured, and this is what they saw. But then to have them say, well, it means this. Because even in the abstract, they're talking about, is it Holmes, the guy who shot up the Aurora, Colorado theater? And they're talking, well, he wore a mask. And it was, they were drawing these loose comparisons to gun violence. And
yeah,
this
and that's
him.
The problem with it. Once they start jumping to conclusions, then... Yeah. But I think the facts are interesting and the things that they had in the study because, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and part of the reason for that is that R-rated movies have a greater stigma now than they did.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, 10, 12 years ago, Congress was pushing legislation to penalize companies if they advertised R-rated movies during what would be considered more family-friendly shows mm-hmm. on TV.
Yep.
Like $10,000 a day type fines to it. And that didn't pass. But obviously there's a bigger stigma to R-rated movies now. The other thing that it didn't study is it doesn't study actual violence. It just says gun violence and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Braveheart is probably one of the most violent movies that came out in the 90s.
It's true.
It would not have shown up on the study because they didn't have guns
at
that time. I recently watched the Hobbit.
Right.
I don't know. Do they consider the bows and arrows? Would that be?
I don't think so.
It's not
a gun.
Yeah. So that's a PG move, PG-13 movie. It doesn't have it.
Right.
I also watched Man of Steel, and there's actually very little
mm-hmm.
gun violence.
Yeah,
now,
not so much.
It exists because there's a scene where Zod shoots a Kryptonian elder with a plasma weapon, so that would count.
Yeah, there's that. But other than that, it's just, you know, superhero violence.
They wipe out Metropolis, practically. Yeah. And that wouldn't count. So I think there's also...
Well, and there are limitations to you know, what you can do and what you can study. So they had to create guidelines.
Yeah, that's true. So I think, are PG-13 movies getting more violent? Well, it's just, I think that their marketing, they found over the last 15 years, but more like mm-hmm. last 10 or 12, they've really found that the PG-13 rating is most marketable everywhere.
Right, exactly.
Not just in America.
No. And, you know, we talk about that all the time that, you know, yeah, you can make a movie rated R or you can cut back a little bit and you can get all the teenage boys.
Exactly. And that makes me wonder if movies like earlier this year, The Last Stand, even the new Die Hard movie, even though a lot of people didn't like that,
mm-hmm.
that was rated R. Mm-hmm. Bullet to the Head, I think, was terrible. No one's going to see that anyways. But like The Last Stand, if they took out the blood.
Because mm-hmm.
they don't care about the MPAA doesn't care about the amount of guns and weaponry. They care about blood.
Right.
And there's no blood. So I think, you know, and again, the other thing is if you look at the study and look at the graph where they say it's three times, the biggest spikes happened in like the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. They also claim that there was no change whatsoever. Zero change. A completely flat slope for R-rated movies. And one thing about statistical analysis mm-hmm. teaches you
mm-hmm.
is anything that's like flat, that doesn't change, that's exactly the same, is questionable.
Right.
So that makes me question that. And then you also have these other things like Prom Night, remake of Prom Night, which was PG-13. I don't think it had any gun violence. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen it. But they kill people. Or a Serbian film,
mm-hmm.
which is, for those who don't know what that is, it's considered...
It's very violent.
The most offensive movie ever made. It's so offensive. Even if I described what happened, I'd get kicked off the radio. It was so bad. They had to make cuts to get an NC-17 rating to show it in America.
Wow.
That one, I don't think has any gun violence in it.
Yeah, no,
it's horribly violent. It's an interesting thing
to
consider.
There are limitations to what you can study in this one.
I don't know what they're trying to say, I think that the article was written with a bit of an agenda, and now it's interesting to see what people are using
mm-hmm.
it for. So.
But it's an interesting study nonetheless.
That's true.
Yes.
Let's move on. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the best movie, Best Man Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Christian Dreyer Kramer.
Hello.
We are going to be talking about some movies
now. We have lots of movies to talk about.
It is the holidays.
Yes.
And I am the best man ever.
Right.
This is a terrible segue. Why did you let me come back from this?
I don't know.
You're getting
revenge. I wasn't thinking.
You're getting revenge to me because I accidentally texted Kristen last night at like 11:30. It was redonkulously late. And she never texts anyways. She's like Machete.
Right. That's exactly what I'm like.
Just like Machete. Or Machete as a...
I have a husband who doesn't believe in text plans. That's what I am.
So I get a text from her in the middle of the... It was like, I don't know, like 9:30 or so.
Yeah, the middle of the night.
Middle
9:30.
Well, for you.
I am still wide awake and usually working at 9:30. Thank you very much.
So I get a text and I'm like, oh my God, so what happened? Something happened. Did her house blow up? Because
yes, the house did blow up. Our internet went down.
Oh no. That's equivalent of the house
pretty
blowing
much.
Up. That is what takes
in our house. We do not know what to do when the internet goes down. We all freak out. And then I was like, we can't even watch TV. It was terrible.
So I text her. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then she's like, okay. And we had a little quick conversation. Well, of course, on the phone, whatever your last text that you send is whose name's up there. Well, since she never texted me, the second it was done, out of my mind. I didn't realize.
Well, if
you were
it was
texting.
That momentous of an occasion, you should remember that I texted should've. You. It was a big deal.
So then my wife went to bed. And since I'm a lazy SOB, I didn't go down to talk to her.
Right,
just
because that's how
her.
We communicate with our spouses these days.
This is how it works. And I was so busy, and I texted her about, and I'm like, something about dinner. And I sent it, and I'm like, I hadn't gotten a response from her. I looked, and I apparently sent it to Kristen.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's a good thing that I wasn't like, hey, baby, want me to come over and rub my
yeah.
naughty bits all over you?
Which would have been awesome, and it would have been on Facebook by now.
I know. Amazing. All right. With that, let's move on to this movie we're going to talk about, which is almost as amazing. And
something
that is
like that.
The Best Man Holiday. More than 10 years after the events of The Best Man, you all remember that movie from 1999.
Right.
Four groups of friends-ish get together to work out their differences and celebrate Christmas.
I can't tell you how good it is to have all of us under the same roof again.
Christmas in New York.
That's going to be great.
How you doing? I'm Brian McDonald, Harper Stewart.
Hi.
Hey, baby.
No more pretending. Is it a boy or a girl?
We just wanted it to be a surprise.
Oh, yeah? Harper's good for that.
We used to be best friends. You're my boy, and I miss you.
All right, I'm going to let you go first. I'm assuming you've never seen The Best Man.
I haven't, although, you know, there is a segment in the beginning that, you know, you can take notes on and figure out what happened in the first one.
Oh, my Lord.
But I have to tell you, the setup for this movie is so completely ridiculous that it's hard to get beyond. I mean, okay, here's the deal. All of these people who, I don't know how much they've seen each other in the last, you know, however many years.
It's been like 15 years since the last movie.
14, yeah. 14. But,
I remember.
Okay, now, I don't have a lot of friends who own giant mansions with like 5 bedrooms to spare.
That's because you don't know anyone who plays football for the Giants.
It's true. But I can't imagine that during Christmas, I would like blow off Christmas with my family and bring myself and my husband and my child to stay in a house with a bunch of people.
Did they? Yeah,
for like several days during Christmas.
Do they explain what happened to everybody else's family, or they just showed up? Because I don't. Now you mention that, that went past me.
Yeah, they're all in this house, and they're having
no one's
like,
mom's going. You're coming over for Christmas,
right? And they're having like pajama nights, and they're having air band, and they're having like formal dinners. And here's the thing: even if they're the best of friends, that would be weird.
And they've got like one cook.
These people all kind of hate each other.
I know.
There are so many things going on in this, and there is no way that I would spend a week for Christmas with all of these people who quietly hate me.
I wouldn't spend a week with... look, there are very few people on this planet that I want to spend a week or even near the holidays.
It's true.
I can deal with my family, but
I don't care
what?
If they're giving me a spa day.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not going.
It's so bizarre because you're right. You do kind of need that golf scorecard. At the beginning and trying to figure it out?
Oh, yeah, because this guy slept with this girl and this one and almost hooked up with this one. And you're like, and these people are all together in the same house
supposedly
for like
friends.
A week. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, and the other thing is like everybody's wealthy. Even like the people who are struggling are wealthy.
Yeah.
Somehow Terrence Howard makes money smoking dope with the Dalai Lama.
It's true.
It's literally that's a part of the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know how. But even the guy who's ready to go broke is still doing extremely well for himself.
Yes. Although they do take hand-me-down toys from their friends.
Yes.
For their new baby.
Well, strollers, but like the $5,000 stroller.
Well, yeah.
That kind of thing. It is your very typical sort of like kitchen sink soap opera drama. And it's with the African-American cast, except for the white maid and the one boyfriend of
The token white man, who is the whitest man you will ever find.
He's like clear.
Yes. He is so white. And they give him the whitest accent. It's so bad.
And then, of course, when he's gone, they have this long discussion about, well, let's just say the most stereotypical thing, the most positively stereotypical thing about African-American men.
And their anatomy.
Fill in the blank.
Yes.
Wow. That actually is a double entendre right there.
There you go. So moving right along. So, yeah, this movie is so all over the place. So all over the place. Because in the beginning, it's actually, you know, it's crazy, but it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah,
but then you hit this brick wall. There's this big revelation, and all of a sudden it turns serious drama.
These kind of movies always do that. They always get like...
It seems a little extreme for me, even for that kind of a movie.
I think it's been propelled by the Tyler Perry syndrome, because this is what happens in Tyler Perry movies. Everyone's all goofy and jokey, and then like... Then it's, I mean, like, when it goes down.
It goes way down.
They go nuclear.
The woman sitting next to me, like, she went from howling and stomping her feet to, like, openly weeping.
Oh, that's amazing.
And, you know, like, wow, I don't know what this movie is trying to be. And then it changes back just as suddenly as, you know, it just... Wow.
Then it turns into like six different movies at the end.
Yeah.
Where it's because it starts, you could almost believe this was a stage play.
Yeah.
By kind of how they showed it. Because it's just a bunch of people in a house.
In one big house. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then it turns into a football movie. And then it turns into something else that I don't want to say because it can spoil things if you can't predict what's exactly happening.
Right.
Then it turns
into, because like, you will see it coming from a mile away. You
then
will.
It like turns into the worst sitcom plot.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
And it just, it's all over. It's just kind of nuts.
Yeah. And then, like, then it gets really preachy, like, literally preachy.
It does. And that's the thing. I mean, you have some pretty grown-up conversations in this movie. This is definitely a rated R movie.
Yeah, it's R-rated.
But then you get into these heavy religious topics and all this. I'm like, I do not know what I'm supposed to be taking out of this movie. I'm so confused.
It reminds me a little bit of that movie Australia. Do you remember that Baz Luhrmann movie?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Where... It was like, because my theory on Baz Luhrmann's Australia was he knew he wasn't going to get money for a sequel, so he just said, I'm just going to make the entire thing now. Even I'm going to make like two or three movies in one. It's going to be 3 hours. Yeah. And that's what this one was like. And it just kept going on. And it just keeps ending. It's like Return of the King, only Frodo never goes home.
It's true, because, yeah, there were times, you know, when it gets serious, you know, it was an emotional film. And even I get caught up in it, but after a while, I'm like, okay. Enough.
Yeah.
I get it. It's sad.
You ever have those things where you're like having a good dinner with friends, or you're at somebody's house and you're playing cards and it ends. You should go home, but you don't.
Right, yeah.
That's kind of what the ending of this movie is like. So final grade, what do you say?
Kind of sucks.
Yeah, I'm going to say it kind of sucks because there's a certain enjoyability. And if you love the first one, I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming
I'm sure you'll love this
one,
but still.
It'll make more sense.
Kind of sucks.
All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking about Charlie Countryman and Dallas Buyer Club.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. It is a crazy week full of movies this week.
I've been to space.
Do you want to comment on that?
No.
Okay. Okay, up next, we have Dallas Buyers Club.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew McConaughey plays an HIV-positive Texan who smuggles non-FDA-approved treatments into the country to sell to fellow AIDS patients.
He's not just sure, he's HIV-positive.
Mr. Woodruff, you've tested positive for HIV. Have you ever used intravenous drugs? Have you ever engaged in homosexual conduct?
No. Mr. Woodruff,
we estimate you have 30 days left.
They got good meds out of Mexico. That's better than what you can get here in the States.
that importing illegal drugs for sale is a very serious offense.
They're not illegal. They're merely unapproved.
Welcome to the Dallas Buyers Club.
I'm just going to let you run with this now, since you're just jumping right in.
What's funny about this movie is this. I'm actually stealing this from somebody.
Okay.
Scott Mendelson, I saw, point this out. He's like, it's an AIDS movie, you know, and it's about the AIDS, HIV. It's definitely circles that topic.
And that's the thing. It circles the topic. It circles a lot of topics.
Yeah.
Really, this is about Matthew McConaughey's character.
Well, that's true. And that's the thing, is that he's not gay. He got it just through having sex with everybody possible.
Exactly.
And it's a true story. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'll give you that. But somebody, this guy I know, Scott Mendelson, reviewed it, and he made a point. He's like, you know, they really go far to prove to you he's not gay.
It's true.
The movie starts with him having a three-way in the bullpen
at
of
the
a rodeo.
Yeah.
There is nothing more heterosexual than a three-way in the bullpen with two women.
I guess.
At a rodeo. With that said,
yes,
it's an interesting movie because if you're closer to the AIDS epidemic than normal,
okay,
you know, like say you knew somebody who had it, or your friends who had it, or mm-hmm. you're part of the gay community, the entirety of what this movie's about kind of got lost on you. Because I remember in the 80s when the AIDS was when the AIDS. I sound like an old person.
The AIDS.
Look up the AIDS. When AIDS kind of came out,
right.
and started to show up a lot, I never really heard about these buyers clubs.
No.
And I think it's an interesting story about that, really.
It is. And I would have liked to heard more about it. And that's one of the things that frustrates me about this movie, that there's so much interesting stuff going on here and, you know, what he's doing and why and all the story around that. But like you said, it circles this stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really tell you the details of it. And I wanted to know the details because it was a really interesting story. And that was kind of what I missed out on with this movie.
Yeah. For those who don't know, a buyer's club was a way to get basically a membership to get medicine that wasn't approved by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because, of course, when AIDS showed up, they didn't know what the heck to do. And so they were really in the infancy of trying to figure out how to, you know, use drugs or whatever. And so there were other options.
Right. So here Matthew McConaughey's character travels around the world finding these drugs and bringing them back so he can share them with people in this club.
And at the time it was legal to do that because he wasn't a doctor prescribing them. It was being a club. And that's the thing where it's a little iffy. I don't understand how the legalities all work.
And there is like a whole battle with the FDA that goes on. Oh, yeah. And again, you know, this is stuff that we don't really see in the movie. You just kind of, it touches on it. It happens in the background.
Yeah. And the other thing is, of course, and being the whole point of pointing out that he was heterosexual and just like, you know, like daringly heterosexual in the movie is it shows him who he started off as a real redneck kind of homophobic guy,
which he still is kind of in the end.
Oh yeah,
you know, he's a little.
I mean, yeah,
he doesn't grow and change that much.
Yeah,
but you know, he does end up caring about something a little bit bigger than just himself.
He hugs a gay guy.
It's true.
At one point, yeah. You know, but the point is, and again, it's a true story. This guy was not gay.
Right.
Had AIDS, and of course, it gave him a relatability to an entire group that he marginalized.
Right.
You know, through his life. So there's a lot going on in it.
Right.
You know, there's that. There's him dealing with having AIDS. There's him dealing with having, you know, the homosexual angle of it. There's him dealing with the legalities of it and the medical element of it. And so it's interesting. I found it interesting. Why I liked it was because it brought this to light that I never knew.
Mm-hmm.
And also Jared Leto's in it.
Yeah, and that's it for me. Seriously, I could not take my eyes off him during this movie. He is phenomenal.
Yes.
And he hasn't been in a movie in like 7 years.
Yeah.
And he comes out with this movie and it's just amazing.
Yeah. He does a fantastic job.
You know, Matthew McConaughey is good too. He is, you know, kind of Matthew McConaughey. But Jared Leto is just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And he really, because you're right, Matthew McConaughey still has a southern drawl. He's a lot skinnier because he lost weight for this.
Yeah.
Because his character has AIDS.
A lot.
And Jared Leto, or Leto, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Jared L. He just becomes his character.
It took me a while to even realize that it was him.
I'm like, he looks like Jared. Oh, that is him.
And okay. I kept thinking that. I'm like, wow, this person is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, wow, that is Jared Leto. And he just completely transforms himself for this role. And it's incredible.
I mean, it's a good movie. It's worth seeing.
It is,
definitely a conversation starter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is one of those movies that if you were to go to with somebody, you could talk about it afterwards, mm-hmm. as opposed to if you know where to go see. Well, you could talk about The Best Man Holiday and be like, what the heck happened?
Right. Yeah. We've done plenty of talking about it.
So final grade on the Dallas Buyers Club.
I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
I'm going to say it kind of rocks, too. We agree on that. Two we agree on. Let's talk about the next
movie.
Wow. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. The next one we don't have a trailer for. I apologize. It's because Kristen was supposed to text it to me.
It's my fault, yeah.
this is Charlie Countryman. A young man is visited by the ghost of his recently deceased mother and told to visit Bucharest to find happiness.
Or something.
Yeah,
he'll find something in Bucharest.
This stars Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, it does.
And it's kind of out there because he does talk to dead people. But he doesn't do it a whole lot.
And that's the thing. You know, it starts out as, oh, yeah, this is going to be something different. You know, this
Did
guy,
you watch it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This guy talks to dead people. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. And there's stuff going on. And then you realize that he talks to dead people for the first, like, 5 minutes of this movie. And then it's just the same old movie.
There's no dead people.
There are no dead people.
Anywhere else.
No.
You'd think he could find a couple in Bucharest.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what really bothered me about the movie, more than just sort of like that leap, is it's your quintessential infatuation movie.
Yep.
And I've seen a lot of movies like that. And there are people I know personally who just love those kind of movies because they get into that fascination thing, in that infatuation thing. Because the whole thing is he goes to Bucharest and he meets Evan Rachel Wood's character because it's mm-hmm. her father is on the plane with him and he dies, you know, on the plane.
It's one of the dead people.
And he ends up trying to get this relationship, but she is messed up with some crazy people.
Right.
And she is
married
up.
To a crazy, angry, violent, jealous man.
Yes. And what's so amazing, there's nothing about her that is actually would make, I mean, aside from she's attractive, Evan Rachel Wood is a beautiful girl.
She plays a cello.
But there's nothing about her that suddenly makes me say, oh, well, this is why you should fall in love with her. She's pretty, but she is your typical psycho girlfriend.
Yeah.
She just hasn't shown her colors yet.
And, you know, one of the things that really got me caught up in this movie was Rupert Grint is in it. And Rupert Grint, his role, totally pointless.
Let's put it this way. There's one scene where what they were talking about in Best Man Holiday that we couldn't specifically say kind of happens to Rupert Grint.
And here's the thing. Poor Rupert Grint. You know, all this stuff is going on, and I just wanted to grab him and take him back to Hogwarts and say, you know, it's okay, Ron Weasley. You don't have to be in this ridiculous movie. I felt sad.
Yeah, it is that whole, you know, how can I say this without getting kicked off the air? Shia LaBeouf needs to use one of those vending machines in a woman's bathroom.
And you know that he's trying to make, he's trying to make movies like this to get some cred.
Yeah,
you know, I'm a serious actor. It doesn't work.
No.
I mean, there is one scene where he's trying to be really happy, and you're like, is that what you think looks naturally happy? Because to me, that looks like a serial killer.
When he's running?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's terrifying.
Anyways, final grade.
Kind of sucks.
It totally sucks. Yeah. Sorry. Totally sucks for me. Anyways, we got to go to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking box office.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
Moose and squirrel.
What was that?
That was my bad Bucharest accent.
Never go to Romania.
Part of the thing with that movie, I will say this, is it sort of hinges on the fact that you have to already believe that Bucharest is the worst place to live in the world.
It's true.
And Budapest is
And
beautiful.
That's the thing. Everybody keeps telling him, don't you mean Budapest? Don't you want to go there instead? And he's like, no, my mom said Bucharest.
Yes.
So, my dead mom said Bucharest. So, there you have it.
Yep.
So, we have a listener email. Let's just get on to something else, shall we?
Yeah, let's read it. I'm going to truncate a little bit of this off. This is also from our good friend, our dear friend.
Red State Gabe.
Red State Gabe. This
Hello
is a follow-up to,
you. To
last week because we crushed his dreams.
You did. Dream crusher.
You helped me. You jumped. I crushed them and you just couldn't. They were already broken. And you
did I
just,
kick him while he was down? Yes. Is that what I did?
But since we told him last week.
It was a light kick.
He goes, is there a career for a screenplay editor? If so, does it pay well enough to live off of? And is it an achievable goal to get in that field? I find that I'm much better at editing words than film and think this would be a better choice for my dreams.
Okay, dream crusher, have at it.
Well, here's the thing. When it comes to screenplays, there's no Perry White of screenplays.
Yeah. I mean, if you've looked at a final screenplay,
yeah,
they're a mess.
I mean, professional ones, too.
Yeah. I have read some screenplays. I'm like, wow, these people can't spell. They can't punctuate. It's a mess. But nobody cares.
And what comes off that screenplay, just as long as they can have coherent dialogue coming out of the actor's mouths, however it gets there,
mm-hmm.
they're not worried about grammar or punctuation. They just want to make... And then they change stuff all the time.
The screenplay is kind of just a jumping off point, really.
Yeah. I remember about the time that The Best Man came out.
Nice.
In the late 90s, I had a friend who worked for the Ohio Film Commission, which doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There was a movie that was shot partially in Cleveland, and he gave me a copy of the script. And it was some movie. It was with Rob Lowe. And it was – I mean, so actually it wasn't just an indie, just a rock-bottom indie,
right,
but it wasn't a huge movie. And it ended up on cable. And I had HBO or Showtime, and I saw that it was coming on. So I ran and got the script. I go, I'm going to – honestly – when I tried to follow along with the script that was given to the Ohio Film Commission for location purposes.
Nice.
I couldn't find anything.
Wow.
It could have been a different script. But I know it was the right movie. So that there's so much changes. And the people who end up actually editing or changing the screenplay is usually
it's either the writing team or even, you know, the director and the cast as they're working with it. Yeah. So
I mean, if you really enjoy writing and editing, then the best thing is to just get a job at a publication, whether it's online or whatever. And if you ever buy a book that's like a screenplay, you know, like, oh, you know, this is, you know, Man of Steel, the screenplay. Let me buy this. You know, this is page one.
Which
Krypton
Red State
blows
Gabe,
up.
Red State Gabe probably already owns that one.
Oh, Red State Gabe is crazy into this Man of Steel. It's insane. It is kind of crazy.
Yes.
We love your Red State Gabe.
We do.
But when they, well, like if Penguin Books or Putnam or whatever publishes that
Publishers,
stuff.
Yeah. You know a couple of them. Good job.
Yeah. Well, I've heard of them. They exist. We are sent books during award season. I don't read those things.
I don't understand that.
But they'll have their own people edit to make sure it's coherent. They have that's just a regular book editor at that point.
Right.
So there really isn't any.
And
I guess
those,
the answer to the question, there is no one who edits screenplays.
Not really, no.
And if you read a screenplay, it shows.
Right.
So, okay, next week I expect
what kind of dreams can we crush next week?
Yeah, tell me something
Please.
You want to be ever since you were a child,
yes.
And then I'll tell you can't do it. Anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about box office.
We are horrible human
beings. We're awful people. We struck down. All right, box office winners. I said $100 million for Thor. You said $60 million for Thor. I was actually closer.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. It did well. What's funny is when the numbers were first coming in, people are saying, oh, it's underperforming. And I'm like, no, it's not.
No, because the first Thor only made $50
yeah.
in its opening weekend. So it did really well.
It made $86 million when all came in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, the original numbers were going to, the original estimates were like, early weekend were like 75 to 80. But it held better through the weekend.
Mm.
It wasn't as front loaded.
Right.
It was less front-loaded than Iron Man 3 or The Avengers. Of course, I mean, it didn't make as much money as those. But it came close. I mean, it did. $86 million ain't bad for a movie.
It's not bad at all.
No.
I would take that.
Put that in perspective.
Or, you know, our bio film that's coming out. I will take the $86 million.
Bio film?
Yes. Fat guys at the movies. The movie.
The movie. There was a movie about the atomic bombs in World War II. It was called Fat Man and Little Boy. This will be Fat Guy and Little Girl or something like that.
I can see that that's going to make it to the Hallmark Channel.
Oh, it'll be amazing. Be rated PG-13 and have tons of gun violence in it. Anyways, the other thing with the Thor, just to mention, it's made at the end of last weekend, it made $241 million overall to foreign, which gives it a $337 million worldwide. And it's going to likely beat Thor's worldwide box office by Monday. So
not bad.
The Avengers bump is kind of helping it a little bit.
Well done, Chris Hemsworth.
There you are. Way better than your
and
brother.
Your crazy pecs.
And his crazy ex-girlfriend. Then it's Bad Grandpa at $11 million. I mean, that was a huge drop from $86 million to $11 million. Although, that's not bad for Bad Grandpa.
Yeah.
Almost $80 million for the whole
crazy.
Freebirds, Las Vegas, Ender's Game, blah, 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 all the way down. And then About Time did not do very well.
No.
Came in at number 9 with $4.8
million. Wah, wah.
Makes me wonder if Richard Curtis wants to go back in time and see what he can do to change that.
Oh, the time travel jokes.
Hurdy, hurdy, hurdy. What do you think's going to win this weekend?
I'm not going to say Charlie Countryman.
No.
No. I'm going to give it to Thor.
Thor again? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I will say 50 for Thor.
50? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm going to break with tradition. I'm going to go for the Best Man Holiday.
Okay.
And I'm going to say $30 million, although it probably will be Thor, but I just need to be different.
Why not?
But I think the Best Man Holiday is going to do better than people expect, partly because there was this vacuum created when Wolf of Wall Street wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Thor's still knocking around.
And people are looking forward to seeing this movie. Yeah. I was sitting next to another critic, and she was saying that one of her friends, his sister, that is the one movie that she's been looking forward to all year.
Really?
So, yeah, I know. Go figure.
Well, it's amazing.
Yeah. And she said when he first mentioned it to her, she said, come again? What's this movie you're talking about? So, yeah.
All right. That's it on box office. When we come back. Oh, no. We're still
here.
We're
still here.
We're not going anywhere.
We're staying.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. Now it is time for our segment we like to call the world famous
DVD Roundup.
Yeah.
Woo. That was wow.
I don't know what that was. Anyways, we already mentioned Man of Steel because that's Red State Gabe's favorite movie of all time. And
ever.
For the rest of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hates Ben Affleck. He does. He spammed my Facebook wall about how much he hated Ben Affleck. I made some mention of, like, I'm watching Man of Steel, and he's like, Ben Affleck sucks! 28 posts later.
Hmm.
I'm really picking on Red State Gabe. Sorry, Red State Gabe.
We only do it because we love you.
Man of Steel is a decent movie. I'm watching it again, and same things I liked again, and the same things I didn't like. I pretty much agreed with myself from the summer.
Yeah.
Which doesn't always happen.
Both of you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both all the voices in my head were talking in unison.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
It's always nice when it works out that way.
It does have a neat feature on a call. It used to be what Maximum Movie Mode used to be for.
Right, yeah.
They don't call it that anymore, but same kind of thing where it's like you have stuff that plays throughout the movie.
Yeah, little videos and pop-up thingies. And
yeah. That's actually kind of cool.
Cool.
There's also JFK, the 50th year commemorative collector's edition. This is Oliver Stone's movie from 1991.
Right.
Which is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it once in college when it first came out. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in ages. Yeah.
It's really good. I mean, there's a couple points where it just slows down because it's like 3.5 hours long.
Right.
But it's a good movie. Definitely worth checking out. And it comes with a... two JFK retrospectives, which are big puff pieces, and it also comes with PT-109, which is the Cliff Robertson movie.
Right, yeah.
About JFK and World War II. And then it has this Oliver Stone, you know, why JFK was awesome and why, you know, Nixon and Johnson were evil video from a TV show he did.
Nice.
That's worth checking out. There's Turbo.
Turbo.
Turbo's cute once you get past the fact that it's completely preposterous. Blackfish. Did you watch Blackfish yet?
No, I haven't.
The big indictment of SeaWorld.
Yes.
And the killer whales, which is desperately trying to live up to its name. What's really funny about it is if you go to Amazon and you search it, it'll say starring Tilikum, which is the killer whale.
There you go.
So it's a worse
starring scene. Credits.
It's a bit one-sided. There's also Francis Ha, which I haven't had a chance
with
to see.
With Greta Gerwig.
Did
yeah,
you
no,
see that
I
one?
Haven't seen it either.
I kind of want to see that. It's getting a lot of good buzz. And then Dexter Season 8, the final season of Dexter. Stinker of the Week.
Yes.
Paradise.
A Paradise. Diablo Cody, shame on you.
That's what I have. That was my review of that movie.
Nice.
We talked about it a couple weeks ago. You can find it online.
Yep.
Anyways, we got to go. This week we had... next week we're going to be talking about The Hunger Games, Catching Fire. That's the little movie you might have heard of. And Delivery Man.
See ya.